Welcome to Naked and Counting, the longest running podcast serving the Afro-Latin dance community. I'm Magna Capel.
And I'm Leon Rose. We're here to discuss the topics that you want to hear in an informative and lighthearted way.
What up, Leon?
What's going on, Magna Gopal? How are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent. You?
I'm better than you. I know you've been flying thousands upon thousands of miles around the world to top up your air miles.
Yep.
Looking for your gold status, right?
Yep. A crazy trip recently that was just back-to-back trips to Singapore with really no break at all. But I'm 55,800 miles closer to my 1 million flight mile goal.
Yeah, we're really going to profit from that.
Yeah. So, I am.
we you got to say we, come on. So I just, I don't know if you've noticed, there's a topic going around at the moment. You probably haven't noticed because you have been stuck on aeroplanes. But the subject has come back up again about social dancers, performers, professional artists getting paid to social dance. Should they get paid? There was a comment somebody sent me, and that was, yes, professional artists have to be paid for all their social dance.
Well, it's interesting you bring this up because I think we actually discussed this in episode 147, How Much for a Dance? And we had a bunch of different ideas, but it's interesting that it's coming up again. And there's so many things to consider. First of all, for me personally, social dancing is the fun part. Social dancing is not something I feel obliged to do. It's something I want to do. And I enjoy it. And for organizers who are trying to create a certain vibe at their event, or they want their artists to be able to dance with everyone, I think you as an organizer need to pick your artists accordingly. Because we've talked about this in multiple episodes. Different people bring different strengths. Some people bring just amazing shows. Some people bring really great workshops. And some people are also, in addition to one or the other or both, also bring social dancing to the table. And some of the artists who focus just on creating these amazing shows might not really have the energy or the time for the social dancing. And so if you're an organizer and you're thinking of setting up an event that's got banging shows or amazing workshops and you want social dancing, you pick your artists accordingly.
I feel like I was there when this whole subject really started to take off many, many, many moons ago. And I can understand why it came up because, you know, from your traveling, I know sometimes when you're traveling halfway across the world and then all of a sudden you've got this crazy hectic schedule that you were not probably not aware of. You know, you land at the airport, you got to go straight to a place to take photos. You haven't got time to go and unpack your stuff. You've got to go and perform straight away. You got to go straight on social dance. You got to go here and there. A schedule has been kind of set for you. It is tiring, especially when you've been doing it every weekend. So before that, I think because we're old school, that was kind of a taken. It was a given that we'll go on social dance. We'll go and do it because, as you said, we love it. We got into it because of that. Now, I think we have to, the promoters have to be really careful because if you're creating this schedule, you're not employing robots. You do have to take that into consideration. You do have to take into consideration the fact that maybe the hotel is not next to the venue. That means somebody's going to get less sleep. So definitely take everything into consideration. But also as a promoter, I've noticed recently is that a lot of them are putting into their contract a minimum amount of hours of social dancing, which I think is reasonable. Because as an organizer, I know I want to choose artists that will give me a good show, that will social dance, because I know there's people that would want to meet them, but I know I'm not employing a robot, as I said before. So I may ask or I would expect as an organizer, by choosing certain people, choosing the right people, that they would dance a little bit. And I don't, I never like, I would never force anybody to dance.
But you bring up a really good point. You are actually employing artists who bring that to the table as is. You're not actually saying, look, let me bring this group that I know because they could do really great shows. And you know that they don't enjoy social dancing. You're thinking, well, let me balance this out instead. Maybe I don't bring this group and I bring this group instead because I know they social dance. So you're considering that into the equation and not forcing it upon the dancers.
Yeah.
Because for the social dancing, I mean, now it's a matter of cost, right? Like if you say a minimum number of hours and you're saying 1 hour of social dancing each night, well, how much does that cost? And what are the additional costs that you need to factor in? Because for a leader versus a follower, it's a very different experience. If I was a lead and told, listen, as a lead, you need to give me an hour of social dancing. Well, if I'm tired, I'm going to have some basic ass social dances. It's going to be a crossbody lead with an inside turn and a lot of basic steps. I have the ability to dictate that type of dance. But as a follower, if you are also expected to dance, who knows who you're going to get? If the people that you're dancing with have tons of energy and they're well rested, but you've been teaching workshops and performing and doing all of that stuff, and now you're on the dance floor with these people who are like, okay, I'm going to put you through everything. I'm going to put you through the ringer. Now, what is that time worth to you? So I feel personally that a follower has a lot more at stake than a lead because of the nature of the lead and follow of the dance. And so I don't think the cost should even be the same. The price is even the same for a leader and a follower. So if you're going off of that, and then also there's the element of like risks, because again, a lead I think has less risk, even dancing.
Oh,
with...
I wouldn't say that. I've danced with some dangerous people.
I believe you, but the risks for a follower I think are much greater, especially if all of the leads are like that, because you can't. It's harder. I mean, personally, I have no problem controlling a kind of maniacal lead who's going crazy on the dance floor. I can calm him down, but not all followers have that capability. So you have the risk of injury, which should be factored in there.
Oh,
and
definitely.
Then two, there's going to be an additional requirement for organizers to make sure there's plenty of space on the dance floor, that the dance floor is a solid dance floor. You know, like, don't expect someone to come to your event that's on a beach, right, where you're dancing barefoot on the sand for an hour and say, hey, you have to, and make your feet raw every night and then still perform and still teach. So, you know, are you willing to make that exchange as an organizer? Because that might mean that you can't sell as many passes, because if you sell all those passes and your dance floor is packed, now this is a riskier situation for your artists to be dancing in. Greater chances of getting hit, greater chances of collisions and possible injury because of the floor. So are you willing to make that kind of a concession as well?
The thing is, as well, you and I are old school, so we got into salsa or Latin dances because of the social aspect, and the performance came afterwards, and the teaching comes afterwards. For me, it's normal. If I see in a contract they want me to dance a minimum amount of time, I'm not going to worry about that. And also, there's another thing. If you want to get paid for social dancing, just include it in your price. If the organizer likes that price, then do it. You know, if they sign up for it, then it's okay. You don't need to say specifically, I don't know. Maybe it's a case of communicating to the promoter that you have a minimum amount of hours that you want to dance, especially because you're traveling from a long way. You've already seen the schedule. So if you come to an agreement before, but I definitely think as an old school dancer, social dancing should be in there, even if it's 2 hours, 1 hour. But here's another thing. Because we're old school, we're thinking about it as social dancing first and everything comes afterwards. But you've got the new generation that have grown up seeing amazing performance and go to the studio, go, you know, after school or whatever, and they're training hard in the studio for hours. They're not coming into it from social dancing. They're coming into it from hard work, trying to get to a goal. They want to be the world champions. They want to be up on stage, want to do this thing. So for them, social dancing may seem like extra work.
Right, that's a really good point. But in terms of the social dancing, I feel like the context of it is also important because if you make it kind of a 1 hour paid social dancing, but you're a social dancer who actually ends up staying there all night, then what's the value there? Now you might be de-incentivized to dance all night, even if you were interested in dancing all night, because you're like, well, I'm here dancing for 5 hours, but I'm only getting paid for 1 hour. Well, I want to get paid for my full 5 hours, right? So there's that challenge too. And then there's events, depending on where you are, like Europe and the US are not as crazy as my events in Asia. Asia, there are strict queues. People maintain their space in a queue and they can line up all night to dance with you. So if you have an hour of social dancing, but you have a queue that extends beyond that hour, then what? Now is it fair for you to say, well, look, I've done my hour. I'm sorry for the rest of you 50 people lined up to dance with me. I'm not going to be dancing because I'm not getting paid, right? Like you put it does come with a lot of other complications, and it does make those dancers who do enjoy social dancing, those artists that do enjoy social dancing, are going to want to feel compensated for all of their time if they're on the dance floor. And those people that are there to dance with those artists are now going to be like, well, now are you selling different passes? So you have your full Congress pass, your workshop pass, et cetera. But are you going to sell social dancing passes that give you top of the queue, right?
Well,
So do you get VIP?
I actually heard that there was some organizations that the clients were paying to social dance with an artist, and this is why those queues were so strict. I've been all over Asia and I've seen the queues, but I haven't really heard the expectation. Have you?
I have not heard about the expectation on the queues, but I do know in places where there are queues, the queues usually last for hours if you follow the queue itself. Because how many dances can you get through in 1 hour? Let's say 5 minute songs, right? You're not going to be able to get through that many dances, maybe 10 to 12, right? Songs. But if you got 50 people in queue, what are you doing with those remaining 40 people? And now is this like a banking kind of thing, trying to get as much money from your contest attendees? And even there, which artist? How are you even queuing your artist? So let's say someone says, okay, I'm going to pay a premium price to attend this event so I can be at the top of the queue. Well, you got let's say 15 artists, and you can't get through everybody in an hour. Now, how do you feel about not getting all the dances that you paid for, right? So there's so many complications, and I think this should be like two levels of responsibility. One, the organizer, pick your artists. You know, there are multiple artists that you can choose from, and you know what they bring to the table. So if you're really focused on social dancing with your artists, then pick your artists that can deliver on more than one level. And if you're looking for a balance between like high performance shows, then maybe you divvy that up. You have some artists that are more about the shows and some that are about shows and social dancing. And for the people that are actually dancing and performing and being required to social dance, well, you know, think about how that applies across the board. Because if I'm a social dancer and I'm there all night, and I'm getting paid for an hour, and other artists are getting paid for an hour. After their hour, they stop. Then I'm going to be inclined to stop, or I'm going to want more money for all the other hours that I'm dancing because I'm actually still there on the dance floor when other people are not. And so it makes the whole thing is really quite complicated. And I think there's an element of like, yes, I get it. You want people to social dance because people who come there to an event to see someone, a foreign artist, especially who they don't get a chance to see, are probably going to want to dance with them. But I think it's more of the organizer's responsibility to pick their artists accordingly and not put the pressure on every artist to dance, because you might find yourself in a conundrum where you're now paying a lot more money to artists, especially those who are social dancing, because they're going to feel like they're not represented fairly or compensated fairly because they're there all night versus the 1 hour that you're paying them for.
Here's a trick for you up and coming artists there. Social dancing is important. I think we need to be out there social dancing, but it doesn't mean you have to dance every song. Here's an old school. I keep saying old school today. That's the theme. The old school trick I used to do, because I'm not like Magna. I cannot dance every song. I would dance in every corner, make sure everybody sees me, and then take my break when I need a break. Instead of staying in one spot and getting trapped, keep moving, dance with everybody. And also, talking to people, it really does make a difference. It's the social aspect, it's everything. And while you're speaking to them, and I think I mentioned this before, while you're speaking to them, tell them about this podcast. That is the best way. We can solve all issues by people listening to this podcast. And if you give us a topic, we'll tackle it, and you can send it to whoever you want.
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Naked and Counting, and you can reach out to each of us directly as well at Mr. Leon Rose and at Magna Gopal.
Don't forget to check out Magna's podcast, Empowered by Magna.
With Magna. But yes, check that out as well. Catch you in the next episode.
Till next time. Bye-bye.